like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Dr. Ann Lamprou, a holistic veterinarian who operates a practice called Animal Alternatives, emphasizing a host of holistic therapies and certified in veterinary acupuncture. Dr. Lamprou has been practicing in the Tampa area for more than 30 years. By way of disclosure, we should also mention she's married to Ed Green, longtime host of The Freak Show right here on WMNF. We'll discuss with Dr. Lamprou trends and treatments in the veterinary field and in her practice, what it means to be a holistic veterinarian, among other topics. Additionally, Dr. Lamprou will respond to listener calls, emails, and texts about their animals, as long as we keep them sort of general enough that it makes sense to respond to, as opposed to an actual appointment with Dr. Lamprou or some other holistic vet. So all this and more when we speak with Dr. Ann Lamprou in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Also later in the show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll be offering a pair of tickets to see Humphreys McGee playing this Sunday, August 23rd at Janus Live. In addition, later in the program in the Comedy Corner, we'll hear a piece we've never aired before on Talking Animals. But right now, though, I'm eager to speak with Dr. Lamprou with the reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Dr. Ann Lamprou back, in fact, to Talking Animals. Good morning, Dr. Lamprou.
Good morning, everyone.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals once again. Okay, so let's start off this morning by sort of briefly reviewing some history, including some details we touched on the other time you were a guest on the show, which is some 6.5 years ago. So it pains me to suggest this, but it's possible not everyone listens to every show or maybe doesn't remember every show. I'm not sure I remember every show. So maybe you could sort of briefly recount where you went to vet school and what brought you to Tampa more than 30 years ago.
Well, I'm a graduate of Auburn University Veterinary School in 1980, and came to Florida so that I could practice. And my intention was actually to be a zoo veterinarian, and Florida has import stations and lots of exotic animals coming in and out of the state, and so it seemed like a very good choice, and was. I love Florida, even though we have a bit more rain than we like right now.
And just out of curiosity, I don't think I knew that, or at least I don't think I remember that what initially had been the draw of zoo animals, that practicing that kind of veterinary medicine?
Just because there's just such a diversity of life there, and that if you're working on one of those animals, one of those individuals, you actually could be working on one of the last of a species,
mm-hmm.
and helping to
preserve them
and help them avoid extinction.
Interesting. So how did you then veer from what you thought the plan was then to what the plan ended up, as with most of us,
yes,
things somehow find a way of changing
it's
a little bit.
It's always good to have goals,
yeah,
and realize that your goals are just that. And if you find out that something else is a good thing for you to do, veer off that path and go to your next goal. So when I started practicing in Newport Richey, it was a really easy peasy practice. Short hours, had to do a little bit of large animal work, which was interesting.
What sort of large animals do we mean in this case?
Cows and horses.
Oh, wow. Okay.
yeah. And so when the owners were out with their Merck manual, and so was I. So we figured it out together.
On the fly.
Yeah. On the fly. Newbie green vet at that point. And so then I came to Tampa to work with Steve Ledoux, who has been well known in this county, at Tampa Bay Animal Medical Center and Emergency Animal Clinic. We were the 24-hour critical care facility before Blue Pearl was here. And so I started working days and nights, and then it came to me that, gosh, you know, everything I seemed to be doing was, well, most of everything I was doing was helping, but only briefly. and they would go back into their symptoms after the medications were stopped.
Hmm.
Or some of them actually got worse after the treatment protocol. The disease actually went deeper into the body.
Wow.
When I realized that what I was doing with the tools that I had at that time was helping, but not actually helping them heal. It was just controlling a problem at the best.
Mm.
Then I started investigating, you know, well, what else can I do?
So did it seem at that point then it was much more about, okay, I'm at least in a short-term way helping. Maybe it's dealing more with symptoms than the underlying ailment.
Is
that kind of
in traditional Chinese medicine, we say you're lopping off branches.
Mm-hmm.
Where you need to get down to the root of the problem and go from the root.
So this sounds like what might be the beginnings of thoughts and considerations of, well, first of all, it sounds like a bit disenchanted with maybe working within a conventional practice and sort of looking around for how can I do things differently.
Yes, most definitely. And when they announced that the first American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association meeting was going to be in Austin, Texas, I was in. So any chance to go to Austin, I'll take it. And, you know, and then I've got two things at once that I really am interested in.
So you were an Austin fan even way back then?
Oh, yeah.
Great.
I had been when I was in college before for vacation.
Okay,
and
sure.
Stuff. So I went to the first meeting. I thought it was in 1983, but it was actually 1984. And at that meeting, right immediately after, was International Veterinary Acupuncture Society's meeting. And so I stayed a day extra and saw some of their lectures. And I went, oh, my gosh. It was almost like Dorothy coming out of her building, her little house that she was in a tornado and landed in Oz.
Mm.
And it's everything was black and white. And then I opened the door to holistic medicine and there were colors and modalities and things to do all over the place.
So it really was that instantaneous between the two meetings.
Yes.
In Austin, the sort of vague dissatisfaction you were feeling was just boom, here's my answer.
And here's multiple answers.
Uh-huh.
So many different answers that it was, a little overwhelming even. And
wow.
It's like, okay, well, I can't do all of that.
Yeah.
So what do I pick to try to learn well first?
Yeah. And what did you start off with?
I started with acupuncture.
Mm-hmm.
I love homeopathy, but homeopathy is a very powerful but very small part of holistic medicine.
And along the way, for everybody, including in many cases me, let's define our terms. So homeopathy means?
Homeopathy is a treatment protocol using similar products in a energy pattern to help the body heal on an energy basis and then transform that into a physical change. So homeopathy is treating like with like. So if you have a cold that you have all kinds of tears and a lot of clear drainage out of your nose, you might want to take Allium Sepa, which is red onion. So you take the homeopathic energy pattern of red onion to help you with those symptoms to go ahead and clear that out of your system.
So I'll be interested to know, Dr. Lamprey, that you came out and it was like Dorothy stepping out and just vibrant colors and answers, too many even to get your arms around initially, it sounds like. So personally, how did that comport with your own sort of philosophy about living, about health, about medical care for yourself? I mean, what was it, a natural link because you were already sort of inclined that way personally?
Yes. Actually, okay. when I started into veterinary school, I had already been dabbling a little bit in herbology and things like that.
So you were quite open to this and already
right.
kind of exploring it for
and,
you.
And cooking. And when I went to vet school, I said, they're going to teach you the conventional stuff. So I just like put everything else in a back burner and said, learn what they want to teach you here.
Hmm.
And so I focused on that conventional part. And then in 19, you know, after a couple of years of practicing, I was going, okay, what else is there to do?
But it sounds like, if I follow you, that in some ways this was almost anticipatory, because it sounds like when you started vet school, you already had some inkling
mm-hmm.
that, okay, I'm accepted to vet school, and I'm thrilled to be here, and I'm going to learn everything they teach me. but I already kind of have a sense intuitively, I guess, that in addition to what I learned here, I've got to circle back and explore all these things I've already been sort of a little bit plagued
by. Plus, my focus was learning exotic animal medicine and zoo animal medicine. Mm-hmm. So in that, you really have to be top-notch on your conventional medicine field.
Sure.
You really have to, because you are potentially saving the last of a species in that.
Yeah.
So they are so thorough. When I went to those zoo veterinary meetings, oh my gosh, they were so thorough in how they went through the protocols to find out what was going on and what they could do to treat these individuals. It was amazing.
Yeah. You know?
And then it's like, okay, how can I merge all this stuff? Mm-hmm. So I had to kind of let the zoo vet stuff go so that I could pay attention and focus on the holistic medicine protocol. And then I was hoping to pick it back up at some point in time.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like it was really coming back together rather than like assembling it for the first time.
Right.
It's just a matter of sort of, okay, I'm going to have to move the zoo animal part
back
out
to
of the equation because these other things are attracting me more powerfully.
And there's only so much time in a day.
Right, yeah, yeah. By the way, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Dr. Ann Lamprew, a holistic veterinarian who's been practicing in the Tampa Bay area for more than 30 years. If you'd like to ask Dr. Lamprew a question or offer a comment perhaps about your animals, though, again, just sort of generally and we can't probably get into really long, detailed questions about a specific thing, but if it's kind of general enough where she can respond, she will. So you can call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. And people are so eager in some regards that, as I mentioned to Dr. Lamprey before we went there, we already got one email question before the show began. So now you've put these things together and you say, okay, I've gone to these meetings in Austin. It's opened up a whole new colorful world. And now I'm going to proceed. And you proceeded first by way of the acupuncture.
Yes. At that point in time, International Veterinary Acupuncture Society, IVIS, was giving courses every other year. And you had to go away. I went to Durham, North Carolina, at the vet school there. We had our meetings there for a 4 to 5 day period of time. And we did that like every other month for a period of 5 months.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
And so, you know, you learn some, you go back and you study it and you start practicing, because that's what medicine is. It's practicing.
They don't use that term just coincidentally.
No.
Yeah.
You practice until you're quite adept, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so let's really explore this. So what, I mean, obviously acupuncture is sort of a pivotal tool for holistic practice.
And so, is actually acknowledged as an alternative practice here in the United States. And I knew that that was going to happen. I knew that acupuncture was going to be accepted first. So I did the IVIS course and got certified through IVIS. And then I figured, I don't really know enough. So I actually did the human course at Florida Institute of Traditional Chinese Medicine, where I had Chinese people teaching me to be a human acupuncturist.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, you actually don't practice but you have the training to do so should you, I guess, choose to.
Well,
or is it something you have to keep current with?
You have to stay licensed.
Yeah.
And so I graduated and got my human acupuncture license in 1990, 10 years after I got my veterinary license, practiced for almost 2 years, and then started a family, and something needed to be dropped. So people got dropped.
I see. Okay. Yeah, again, the running theme already is there's only so much time in the day for whatever it is. So, okay, so what ailments are most commonly treated with acupuncture? Again, in the veterinary side now.
On the veterinary side, it's the most common thing is musculoskeletal problems, hip dysplasia, back problems, spondylosis. Those are the most common things to start with to be treated. But if you know Chinese medical therapy correctly and can differentiate what pattern it is, then you can actually treat any medical problem with acupuncture. But acupuncture, remember, is just a changing of the energy pattern. And it has to be, and we have this tendency to go back into the pattern we were in before. So you have to do it on a repeated basis. And herbs are extremely important, because then that feeds the physical as well as changing the energy pattern. So acupuncture can be done all by itself, yes, but if you add the herbs to it and add the physical treatment as well as the energy pattern change, that's where you get the best benefit.
Expands the actual impact.
Yes.
Yeah. What are some maladies that then can be helped by acupuncture that maybe most of us might be surprised to hear that we hadn't thought about, like hip dysplasia and some other things that we would anticipate? What are some things to be like, really?
Well, of course, we have so many allergies going on right now in this world because we do live in quite a toxic environment and our immune system gets flared with all the vaccines and things that it's bombarded with. So allergies, immune system dysfunctions are quite amenable to the acupuncture and the herbal therapies.
Interesting. I'm just noticing that as we're talking here, that one of our emailers, subject line, said, my chocolate lab has allergies. We got a rescue from Tennessee as a puppy, and she was covered in fleas and ticks with sores. We got her fully recovered and healthy, but if she gets bit by fleas, it seems this is the cause. She loses her hair on her back hindquarters. Any recommendations about helping her avoid this challenge? What might be going on? Thanks.
Yes, and definitely trying to avoid what the allergen is, the fleas. Good luck here in Florida with that. And there are many natural products you can use against fleas in the environment, because that's really the key, is controlling the fleas in the environment in a non-toxic way. And then there are things that you can do in the patient to try to help their immune system not be as trigger happy. And one of the and whatever you can do to not trigger the immune system, which any dog with allergies, they pretty much immediately get a medical exemption from me. They don't have to have vaccines anymore, especially the rabies vaccine. Now, I do want all my patients to have at least one rabies vaccine for legal reasons. But after they've had more than two, they're pretty much covered for the rest of their life. Not legally, but immunologically, if their immune system is intact and functionable, they're pretty much going to be resistant to rabies. But it's such a zoonotic problem that I have to be very, very careful about that situation. And I do use medical exemptions as judiciously as I possibly can. But some individuals should never be vaccinated again. They are so trigger happy. You vaccinate them, they can go right into an autoimmune crisis and be trying to die.
And is that apparent to you animal by animal, like case by case, or this is sort of more of a general?
It's some of us are healthier than others. Mm-hmm. Some of us can take these onslaughts of vaccines better than others. But some are just so fragile that you better not touch them with something like that.
So in this world, to what extent does this issue constitute a kind of raging debate in veterinary medicine,
as
it seems
medicine.
To? Yeah, in human medicine. I mean, are they very much par in terms of all the charged debate?
Yes, definitely. You know, the vaccination situation in this country, I think, is horrid. But that's my opinion, and mm-hmm. the opinion of
horrid
many.
Meaning that it's just done too frequently
too
and sort
frequently,
of indiscriminately,
too many. They throw them all in at the same time. You know, four or five different things all at the same time. And it's not just the virus particles that are in the vaccine, but it's the adjuvants, the preservatives, the things that are put in there to make the immune system respond to the vaccine. The chemicals that are in there to keep bacteria or viruses or bacteria or funguses from growing in the bottle. Those things can all be triggers to the immune system to set it off into not just responding to the vaccine, but actually responding to normal things in the environment.
Therefore, that's why your position would be somewhat case by case, more or less for a certain animal based on what you know, but generally less than
conventional veterinarians for sure.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, the bottle on the vaccine says, do not give to a sick patient. Well, okay.
That's why they're there,
okay.
Right? Yeah.
So, okay, I won't then.
Yeah. But it sounds like that's kind of a very tricky area to navigate.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Wow. All right. Well, we got some callers, of course, and some emailers. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Lamprou.
Yes. First of all, I want to thank you, Duncan. You have, since I'm a person who is totally aware of animal sentience and how animals are not viewed properly in our society. Your show is a beacon of light, and I hope that more and more people will listen to it worldwide. Number two,
Flattery will get you everywhere. Thank you very much. Now, do you have a question for Dr. Lamprey? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm so glad to hear a progressive veterinarian, and I know this is a controversial thing for her to comment on, but I believe that, as with many other professions in capitalist society, that in my experience as a pet owner, many veterinarians, they look at your pet as a cash cow, and you go in there and they'll start recommending all kinds of invasive, untested, unnecessary procedures because it's part of their business model. And I also would like your guests to comment on other alternative holistic medicines being used with animals now, such as Rolfing and Ayurveda.
Okay, thank you for your call. Okay, Dr. Lamprey, you can respond to any or all that as you see fit. We know we have a lot of emailers and callers.
In veterinary medicine, it is a business. But believe me, if a person really wanted to make money, they would not be a veterinarian.
I see. Yeah.
But yes, it's a business, and businesses have to actually show it's better for them to be in the black on that monetary thing. And what tools you have learned to help you diagnose and therefore treat, those are the tools that you're going to use. As in a surgeon is going to give you his opinion or her opinion about what surgery would benefit. I know surgeons in this town that if they think that the patient won't be substantially better after the surgery, they'll tell you no, do medical therapy instead. You do something else. So there's an ethic problem, possibly, in all medical fields. Fortunately, in veterinary medicine, we don't have insurance companies telling us how we can treat our patients, which is a huge benefit. So consider the possibility that these people do have employees to pay. They've got a mortgages to pay on the business, equipment to do, and they're doing their very best to give you and that patient what they think is optimal. Now, then again, there are some veterinarians that haven't come into this century yet, in my opinion, and are stuck in what they learned many decades ago. And it's almost a point that when you learn these new things that are a lot different than what you were doing in the past, you have to say to yourself, okay, well, was I doing wrong back then? Which is not good for anybody's ego or psyche. Or do you say, okay, that's what I knew how to do best at that point in time. Now I have new information. Let me move with this new information. And so that takes a lot of guts. And some people aren't willing to look at that and go there. But a lot of veterinarians are now coming to this idea of, yes, there are other things than just drugs and surgery to do. And drugs and surgery have saved so many lives. I use them myself. I think it's part of holistic medicine to include drugs and surgery and vaccines. I think if you eliminate those, then you're not using every tool in your toolbox.
And as you were describing this, Dr. Lamprey, I was wondering that, as in human medicine, is there ongoing, like, sort of continuing education and conferences and things in the veterinary world as there are for...
Yes.
So there are opportunities for people to stay up and, mm-hmm. and maybe evolve, if I can say that.
Evolve, yeah.
So it's just a matter, I guess, what you choose to do and what you mm-hmm. choose to pursue in line of that continuing education and what you're open to, I guess, how much you would...
Yes, most definitely. I mean, even our biggest conference that we have in the country, which is just over here in Orlando, they actually have an acupuncture tract in it. So that's wonderful. And as a veterinarian, I have to get continuing education hours in the regular stuff. And also for my acupuncture certification, every 2 years, I've got to have a certain number of hours also. So I think that's wonderful because we can get, there's this thing where you can practice for 35 years and evolve, or you can do the same practice 35 times in a row.
Okay, so I think this kind of, I think we sort of feel like, or at least I feel like we're sort of circling around this. So let's, we earlier already defined homeopathy. So let's, just to go any further, let's spend a moment at the remedial level. And when we say holistic here, what exactly do we mean in terms of veterinary care?
In my opinion, holistic care is using all kinds of different modalities to help that patient to get as healthy as they can be. Not everybody can actually go to be cured. Some individuals are just too old, or the diseases are just too deeply entrenched, and the best you can do is to control that situation. Sometimes Chinese herbs do that. Sometimes the Ayurvedic herbs do that. There's all kinds of different protocols that can be used. And to me, being holistic is going to include everything that I'm comfortable with and know enough about to use. Ayurvedic is not something that I've investigated thoroughly enough to use yet. I know just enough about it that I know what it is, but not enough to use it for my patients yet.
But again, that's an example of something that you're obviously working towards, in contrast to the non-existent hypothetical vet that we were just talking about who has been doing the same kind of practice
right.
for 35 years.
Right. Yes.
So with that in mind then, and I know this is delicate, but I mean, in broad strokes then, how would we kind of compare and contrast a holistic veterinarian with a conventional one, maybe more specifically in terms of a treatment of a kind of animal, or can it even be answered that way?
I think the trap that conventional veterinarians get themselves into is they're seeing the patient and they're just using what they've done before. And they're just seeing the patient with what symptoms are present at that moment. All they see is the symptoms that are, you know, blasting out in their face, pretty much. What's the chief complaint? And that's all they're dealing with. In holistic medicine, what we try to do is we try to see the individual, the whole individual, not just what's going physically wrong with them. What's the emotional situation? What's the home situation? What are they being fed? What strife is going on at home that might be exacerbating the problem because it's a stress? And any stress, you know, little stress is good, okay? It helps boost us. It keeps us toned. But if there's too much stress, then the immune system has a tendency to break down. Whatever the weak link is in that individual is going to start cracking and breaking. And then we're into a quote-unquote disease process.
I don't know if there's a way to do this, but let's say another way to maybe come at this. Is there a specific ailment that would lend itself to say, here's how a conventional vet might approach cat or dog A, and here's how a holistic vet, I mean, well, like, let's just throw out, I mean, this may not be a good example at all, so we'll just discard it if it's not. But let's say in cats, renal disease is not uncommon, at least mm-hmm. in older cats. And I have a particular thing about that because
yeah.
I certainly claimed one of my all-time favorite cats. But anyway, so is there a protocol that there's subcutaneous fluids and things that you mm-hmm. would do. Or is there a protocol that a holistic vet would say, okay, once that's been diagnosed, here's what we would do or recommend for that cat that might contrast in some way from conventional vet?
Oh, most definitely. That is a good one because
okay.
In conventional medicine, there are some really great benefits at doing sub-Q fluids and vitamin therapy and fish oils, and that's pretty much standard protocol right now. In holistic medicine, especially if we know the Chinese herbs, there are certain Chinese herbs that are helpful for regenerating tissue, even kidney tissue.
Wow.
So there are things that we can do. There's nutritional things that are very, very important. Conventional veterinarians have been on board with fish oils for a long time. They do help the kidney to perfuse better. Now, some cats don't like fish, so we have to get around that. But in conventional medicine, it's like they want to cut the protein down really quick. And in holistic medicine, we say, no, cats are true carnivores. They need to have their protein. They need to have a good quality protein, not in excessive amounts. Because if they don't have that quality protein, they're going to start drawing it from their body. And that's very common in older cats with kidney problems. They start fading their muscles.
Mm.
Even on great quality diets.
Yeah.
So that and different acupuncture points or different homeopathic remedies can be given. Sometimes you have to, in homeopathy, it's pretty tricky. You have to, there are low potency remedies that you can use on a daily basis. I've been taught to be a classical homeopath, which is you give one remedy at one potency and you wait for the response.
Before you move on.
You okay. see what yeah. the individual does with that,
sure.
with
sure.
that input.
Yeah.
But think of acupuncture as an energy modality. Chinese medicine is like herbs. Acupuncture and homeopathy are both energy modalities. And so is healing touch. And then there's the physical. You use the Chinese herbs, you use the drugs if they're necessary. There's chitin, things that you can give cats to help absorb the phosphorus that the kidneys no longer excreting correctly so that it doesn't go into the bloodstream. There are very excellent conventional things to do, and you never vaccinate them anymore because there is some suggestion that some of the vaccines that have been grown on feline or on renal cell cultures, they're starting to have antibodies to the cat. When they get those vaccines, they start antibodies to their kidney tissue.
Wow.
And diet, you know, diet is so important. Dried cat food is not what cats historically should be eating. They eat little mousies and birds. So canned food is so much better for them. Then we have to worry about what is the can lined with, because some of the can linings of the cans can cause thyroid problems to occur later in life, which so can our chemicals that we use as fire retardants.
I mean, I think as we already have seen in this example, there really is a contrast.
Yeah.
just in the renal disease example. So I think that's notable. So with that in mind, let me just give the website. If anyone's listening and saying, you know what, I don't at the moment have a holistic vet, but I may want to consider it or at least look into it more. There is a website, ahvma.org, which is the American
Holistic Veterinary Medical
Association.
Yes. American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association.
So that's like a resource where mm-hmm. where based on where you are geographically, they can sort
yes.
of give you a list of,
yes.
of those. Okay. So let's take one of our callers, because this caller has been holding a very long time. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Lamprew.
Hey, how are you today?
Good. How about you?
I'm well. I appreciate what the doctor said about vaccinations. I do believe we over-vaccinate animals and humans, and I'd like to say I love her husband's show.
Okay.
I wonder what her response would be to the overpopulation of animals, especially dogs and cats, in Pinellas, Hillsborough, Pasco County. I hate to see an animal euthanized. How do you feel about spay and neuter, and what can we do to make these lives better? Because I hate to see so many animals just be put down. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank okay, you. Well, thank you for your call, and thank you for your nice nod to Ed.
Yes. This overpopulation thing, I think it's not just animals. I think the world is overpopulated with humans, too. But aside from that fact, let's talk about the animals. And I'm not really a huge fan of the early spay and neuter, but I also realize that a lot of individuals that are going to take a pet may not bring it back at the appropriate time to spay or neuter it. So I think that the spay neuter programs that they have early on are probably a good thing. It's really, really a huge quagmire of different opinions on this. I don't particularly, for my individuals that come into the practice, I don't like to do early spay neuters. I want them to be relatively mature. And if someone doesn't want to spay or neuter, I'm okay with that, as long as that patient and that individual is a good dog or cat and doesn't get into trouble because they're out trying to find some female in heat.
And what qualifies as early spay-neuter?
They're doing it at like 8 weeks of age, 2 pounds for
and
a
what,
cat.
And what would you recommend would be sort of the optimal time?
It sort of depends on what the breed is, because the bigger breeds age further. I'd like for them to go through one heat cycle and try to be a little bit mature. If we're talking a bull mastiff, we're talking 2 years of age. She may go through two.
Yeah.
This overpopulation thing, it is so sad. And the most important thing, I think, is we've got to stop indiscriminate breeding. And that means puppy mills.
Mm.
You know, they really need to not do as much as they're doing. But then there's multiple individuals that are out there just strays. That's what they're going to do. That's nature's call. They're going to go for it. So it's a very sad, very heartfelt situation we've got going on, not just here in this county in Pinellas, but all over the country and the world, actually.
So, okay, let me get caught up, because now we've got a string of emails and texts. And this last comment to our caller reminds me of our emailer who actually sent an email before we even went on the air. So I know we're not going to be able to get to everybody today, and I apologize for that in advance, but I should at least get to the one that sent it in early. So the email says, my dog Marvin has had a quote-unquote heavy load, as our vet said, of heartworms when he was rescued. He was successfully treated with the quote-unquote fast heartworm protocol. We were told that he has heart and respiratory scar tissue because of this. Marvin has a terrible cough. Per vet's orders, he gets 5 milligrams of prednisone every other day. I've tried to decrease the dosage, wean him off, but the cough gets much worse and he produces thick mucus. Is there an alternative to steroids to control the inflammation in Marvin's respiratory system? He is 75 pounds, unaltered male, approximately 6 years old. We've had him 2 years. And then as a bonus question, he sneaks in, when, if ever, would it be safe to get him neutered?
Right. So I think probably the injury that he's had to his lungs and heart is more from the heartworms themselves. The treatment protocol, it's a new arsenic type compound, and it's very effective at killing the heartworms. And when they do shed out, they shed out into the lungs, and there can be some scar tissue that happens because of that. Now, yes, definitely, there are different herbal formulas, whether that's Western herbal formulas or Chinese herbal formulas, that can help to control lung problems from inflammation. And also, there are different food products that can be fed to help that situation with him. So,
or such as what would be an example of a food product or two that could be helpful in
there's,
that way?
Kiwis, but dogs don't eat kiwis that much. Kiwis are really, really high in vitamin C. So I've got this new product in called Camu Camu powder, and I've got a cat with asthma on it, and the cat's doing quite well. With cats, you have to have something really minuscule that you can hide in their food that they don't say, no
toss
way,
back.
I'm eating that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
There are things like doing vitamin C, doing vitamin A. Vitamin A is very important for lung tissue. Doing Chinese herbs. I have one called platycodone and fritillaria. That's really, really good for lung congestion, especially with damp heat or with infection involved with it. So yes, there's a lot of alternatives to just prednisone. It's good that it's controlled with prednisone. That means we've got a chance.
Sure. And just for a guy who's 6 years old, approximately 75 pounds, and they've had him for 2 years, I guess, what about the neutering question?
Well, you know, if he's not obnoxious about marking territory or trying to go run off or humping or anything, you may want to just leave him not neutered. There is some literature out that's saying that neutering dogs or potentially sets them up, especially the big breeds like Rottweilers, for osteosarcoma, for bone cancer later in life.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That seems like a very odd link.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Hmm.
Yes. It's, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Dr. Ann Lamprey, a holistic veterinarian who's been practicing for more than 30 years. We have a number of the emails and texts. We're going to get to some of those. But if you'd like to join the conversation, we're going to probably throw a few things overboard that we normally do on the show to get a little more time with Dr. Lamprey. But so the phone number here, of course, is 813-239-9663. Email is dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. Well, I think we've kind of answered this. This one says, I know some dogs that have really benefited from acupuncture. Can cats have acupuncture? Just curious. And I think the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. It's much more tricky.
How so?
But now I have a laser. I have a laser unit, and I can use the laser to treat the points. Well, you know, I'm needle phobic.
Oh, okay.
I'm a needle phobic acupuncturist. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
I don't like needles.
There's an unlikely path.
Yes. So that's why humans got dropped out of my acupuncture practice. They look like me. But anyway, irregardless, cats are a little bit trickier to acupuncture. I use an injection form of acupuncture on a lot of my canine patients because they got better quicker. It lasted longer and didn't take me as long. So three pluses. But plain needle acupuncture is how I usually do cats, or with the laser unit that I have now. And yes, cats are also amenable to acupuncture. But remember, acupuncture, you can't just do it once unless it's just an acute problem. It's usually we're dealing with chronic problems and you have to come in, you know, multiple times. And that's a hassle.
Sounds like what we were explaining. That's where you get the cumulative impact and the real results.
Right. Yeah. Because if you do an acupuncture treatment, change the energy pattern, it's like a roller coaster. It goes up, you change the energy pattern, but it goes back to where it was. And you want to do an acupuncture treatment before you go back to that bottomed out part again so that you can build on each treatment.
Right. And forestall it going all the way back down.
And that's why I like homeopathy. It's an energy pattern medicine, too.
Cool.
You don't have to come in every week.
All right. Well, here's a question that's probably a little easier and quicker to answer. I have a small dog who is 14 years old and in good health. The vet told me he needed to have his teeth cleaned. It is expensive, but more importantly, I worry about the anesthesia. Should I have this done? Thank you.
Oh, definitely. Dental tartar with all that bacteria that's involved with it can shed out into the heart valves, the kidney, the liver. It's just not good to have those bacterial toxins. There's a situation now where we do have non-anesthetic dentals available, but they don't get under the gum line well. You can't polish as well. So I'm not an advocate of non-anesthetic dentals at this point, though getting a lot of that tartar off there is really important. So they're not totally horrible if they do non-anesthetic dentals. We've got really safe anesthetics now. And for my ancient patients, I will just gas them down with the anesthetic so that it just goes through the respiratory system to the brain right back out the same way. Hmm. So there are safe ways to do a general anesthetic for older patients.
And the short answer is absolutely get those teeth cleaned.
Yes, yeah, please.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So this says, please ask your guests if there's a natural treatment for heartworm.
I have worked with some people using herbs from a supply company that has four heartworms, and I've not really had good success with it in the four patients that we've tried it in with that. So I would say there are ways that you can treat to try to help the lungs with the onslaught of the heartworms, and the heart, of course. But heartworms, they've got their own lifespan too. They're only going to live 4 or 5 years. So if you can help that individual with what we call like the slow kill method, which is using a heartworm preventative that's approved for use with dogs with heartworm. Well, it's kind of approved, but they don't. The conventional veterinary medicine says, no, don't do this anymore. Don't do this anymore. But I've seen many patients that we treat through the slow kill method where we're just doing lung therapy, heart therapy medications. We're doing a heartworm preventative once a month so that they don't get any more. And after a couple of years, they'll come up negative on the test because the heartworms only have a certain amount of time that they can live anyway. They got a lifespan too. There's an antibiotic, a tetracycline type antibiotic that kills one of the bacteria that helps the heartworms live healthier. So I do an every other month protocol of 1 month on tetracycline antibiotics and probiotics, please, because most of our immunity is in that intestinal tract. So you want good bacteria in your intestinal tract so you can have a healthy immune system. But there are ways that you can help an individual without having to go through the imidacide fast kill.
All right. So again, this is Talking Animals. We are going to probably jettison a couple of things that we typically do, including the Comedy Corner and probably the news, animal news and announcements. I just want to quickly mention on that front, though, that there is a wine tasting benefit for Pet Pal Animal Shelter on the 21st, August 21st, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at American Spirits in St. Pete. You can go to the Facebook page for American Spirits or the Facebook page for Pet Pal to find out more. And also want to let you know, of course, as usual, that coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Leroy and Radioactivity, which now rolls into the noon hour. So it's just about 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more. So we're in our sort of final moments with Dr. Lamprou, but we're extending it as far as we can. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Lamprou.
Yeah, hi, this is Amy. Am I on?
Yes, you're on. Go ahead, please, quickly.
Okay, great. Yeah, you know, Rob Leroy had an individual on talking about global warming and how when relative humidity reaches 95% and the temperature reaches 95 degrees, that the human body can't cool down because the high humidity is not allowing the sweat to evaporate from your skin. And I was wondering how that affects dogs and other animals because they don't sweat, right? So when the humidity is high and the temperature is high, is it similar for them?
They have problems too. They don't sweat like we do, but they do have evaporation off their paw pads and out of their tongue and lungs. Panting, there's a reason for the panting. So yes, it can be very bad for them too. And it's very, very hard to exercise in this heat and humidity, most definitely for all of us.
So it's generally their paw pads. That's interesting. I never knew that, their paw pads. And their mouth. So they're going to, it's not necessarily a bad thing that a dog is panting. They're just sweating.
Yeah. They're trying to dissipate the heat. Yeah.
They're helping themselves. Yeah. Thanks. Cool. Thanks for your call. Okay. Let's take another email question here. What causes these black bumpy looking things, parentheses, pimples, warts, in a cat's ear? This is occurring on only one ear and I have ointment to put in the ear. She is 14 going on 15 and I do not think surgery would be good for her. Can this cause deafness? Great show.
I've seen this several times, and it's a cerumen gland, almost like a tumor type thing, and it's multiple areas. I use generally anti-inflammatories and antibiotic to try to keep it under control. If they're large and they bleed, we have to go in and do something. I just had one a couple of weeks ago that came in, and the worst one, we had to cauterize it off because we couldn't get to the base. I cauterized as far as I could. And but there's multiple in both of its ears. So we just try to control it, try to clean up the diet, try not to abuse the immune system with vaccines anymore, and do what we can to keep that individual as healthy as they can be.
So we might be in our final question or two, and we're just going to, because we are going to get to name that on the tune. I do have, again, a pair of tickets to see Umphrey's McGee playing this Sunday, August 23rd at Janus Live. So we will get to that. But again, just trying to get as much Dr. Lamprou time as possible. So here is a question, an emailer that says, "Hi, love your show. 1-year-old Chow Basenji Rescue was never afraid of loud noises, storms, fireworks, until she went to doggy daycare and picked it up from the other dogs. Do you have any idea how I can desensitize her? I don't want to use drugs, but she goes into the corner, stares at ceiling, drools run down her neck, shakes inconsolable. Thunder jacket makes her more afraid. That used to help. Now it's as if she thinks this is going to be bad." This is all in caps. "As soon as the storm is over, she's back to playing and acts fine. Help. I hate to see her suffer, but deplore sedating her. Thank you."
We're in thunder and lightning capital here. And it is a learned behavior. Sometimes, you know, a lightning bolt can hit really close and they learn it all by themselves without patterning it from somebody else. One of the thunderstorm fear remedy mixtures that I use has as its primary ingredient rescue remedy. And there is a pet rescue remedy out there that's in a glycerin base instead of an alcohol base. So I would start with that. To try to alleviate the anxiety issue and try to repattern. No way that the dog will probably take treats at that time, but just reassurance, trying to get into a small enclosed area sometimes is helpful for them. And then I have various other ways that I treat them, but it's more an individual basis what I add to the rescue remedy.
Okay, cool. And we have one last probably question, because I think this is going to be quick to answer, but we're just trying to get as many answers as we can. This was says, can you repeat or write what it is that you had the cat with asthma on? My cat just was diagnosed with asthma. I think you said, is it Camu Camu?
Camu Camu powder, C-A-M-U, C-A-M-U.
Okay.
But there's various qualities of it as well, and I don't remember which one that I have that I use, which company I use. So that's just one of the things that we're doing for this cat. It's part of the protocol, and that's it. You know, I'm treating everybody as an individual, and Duncan's going, quick answers.
No, there can't be. No, I just thought this was just the answer of the product that you mentioned. I just meant,
yes, that's one of the things that we're using.
Cool. All right. Well, gosh, I'm afraid we have reached the end of our time and then some. And so, again, I'm sorry we didn't get to some of the emailers and texters, but we got as many as we could. So we've been speaking with Dr. Ann Lamprew. Again, her practice is called Animal Alternatives. There's a website, animalalternativestampa.com. And, of course, she's on Facebook as well, the practices. You can just search for Animal Alternatives. And one more time, if you are interested in finding out more about holistic vets and getting a referral, it's ahvma.org for the website. And Dr. Lamprew, thanks so much for making the time to join us on Talking Animals.
That was
really
my pleasure.
Great. Thank
Promoting
you.
Wonderful health.
All right. Cool. Thank you. All right. So we have just about reached the end of Talking Animals, and we are going to, as promised, get into a Name That Animal tune. So this is a giveaway. Please only participate if you haven't won something from us in the last 90 days, and there'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to see Humphreys McGee this Sunday, August 23rd at Janus Live. To the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, I will give you a hint. This band features a legendary drummer who's celebrating his birthday today. It's Name That Animal tune on Talking Animals. All right, we'll take any guesses off the air because we have pretty much reached the end of our time here for today's edition of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. It is WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, August 26th, when my guest will be Patrice Jones, co-founder of Vine Sanctuary, a facility in Vermont that provides refuge to animals rescued from the meat, dairy, or egg industries and other circumstances. And the operation of Vine also reflects a philosophical underpinning. Indeed, Vine is an acronym that stands for veganism is the next evolution, and Jones is a fiercely intelligent, absolutely exhilarating public speaker. So I hope you'll join me for that. And it's WMNF Tampa. NPR News is next. We'll see you next Wednesday.